Okay, we're ready to get started here. I'm the president of the Fish and Game Commission. My name's Jim Kellogg, and I'm from Concord. On my left is Commissioner Richard Rogers from Santa Barbara. On my right is the director of our commission, Bob Traynor. And right of Bob is our vice president, Michael Flores, Commissioner Flores from Sacramento. And next to Michael is Adriana Shea from our staff. And then we have with us, first of all, Gary Stacy, our regional manager for the Marine Division. And John New, I can't never say your last name right, Newgaritz. And Pete Hawker from the department. And Eon. Say your last name, Eon. Yeah. So with that, we're here to have public discussion. The department going to do a department. Okay, Bob, you take over.
I'd like to welcome everyone here this evening. This meeting is to receive public comments on the draft abalone recovery and management plan. We'll start off this evening with the department providing a brief overview of the draft plan, and then we'll take public comments. So if you'd like to provide comments, if you would fill out one of the speaker cards over on the back table and hand them in, we'd appreciate it. And we'll turn it over to Ian Taniguchi, I believe, will make the department's presentation.
Thank you. Good evening. Again, my name is Ian Taniguchi. I'm with the Marine Region in Los Alamitos. I'm the ARMP mandate coordinator, and I'll give you just a brief overview of the abalone recovery and management plan, or ARMP. Judging from the people that I see in the audience, you've been to some of these commission meetings, so this is probably a little bit of a review to some of you, but please bear with me. To begin with, the draft abalone recovery and management plan provides a cohesive framework for recovery of depleted stocks in Southern California and for the management of Northern California red abalone fishery and for future fisheries. The purpose of the plan is to provide a guideline for managing and preventing further declines of all abalone species throughout the state and to ensure the current and future populations will be sustainable. The ARMP consists of two stages, an interim plan and associated management goals, and a long-term plan and associated management goals. The interim management and recovery plan also use available funding and data and become effective upon approval of the ARMP. To begin, I would like to first describe the overall approach used to manage abalone under the ARMP for both recovery and management purposes. The concepts are shown here graphically, and this graph is purely conceptual, and is only used as a way to describe the approach we are using in the plan. For the recovery portion of the plan, which pertains to populations that are in poor condition, such as those abalone species that now occur in Southern California, we expect that populations will move along in an idealized trajectory through time as a result of natural processes or through recovery efforts to a point where there is a surplus that can support a fishery. While that recovery is occurring, we are recommending no harvest. Once populations reach a sustainable fishery level, we can consider opening a fishery. Now, for the management portion of the plan, which pertains to populations that are in relatively good status and can sustain a harvest, such as the red abalone population in Northern California and the sport fishery that that occurs up there, we hope to manage the fishery in a manner that will continue the abalone stock abundances above the sustainable fishery level. However, if the stock declines below this level, we are recommending a ratcheting down of the harvest pressure within this precautionary zone, down to a point where we would close the fishery with a buffer above the minimum population level necessary to sustain a viable population in the absence of harvest pressure. The main concept to be taken away from this is that we are suggesting two different approaches within this precautionary zone between fishery closure and sustainable fishery level, depending on whether the population is recovering, where we are advocating no fishing, or has been already sustaining a harvest where we advocate ratcheting down of the take. There are some key density numbers which are used in criteria for both recovery and management within the plan. These numbers are the sustainable fishery density, which is 6,600 abalones per hectare, and the minimum viable population density, which is 2,000 abalones per hectare. The third line you see on the graph there is the is used in the management portion of the plan and is for closure of the existing fishery, and that is set at 3,000 abalones per hectare. Next, I would like to describe how we derive the density criteria for sustainable fishery and minimum viable population. First, minimum viable population. MVP is the minimum threshold density level at which the population can sustain itself. In other words, if the population density falls below this level, there are not enough individuals to effectively reproduce and sustain the population. The density criteria for minimum viable population is, again, 2,000 abalones per hectare. And this density is based on the published research on other species of abalone and on data from collapsing red abalone species stocks in Southern California. And you can see from this graph, this is This is information from Santa Rosa Island at red abalone, and when we started this, populations were right around 1,000 abs per hectare, and you can see through time that has declined. So we know as 1,000 abalones per hectare was not a viable population. The MVP size in the plan was based on the best available data. Data for other abalone species in California is not available at this time. For sustainable fishery level, the density was derived from survey data from three long-established fishery index sites in Northern California. We used the number of abalone per hectare from all depths from surveys at three sites through time. Using the data from 1999 and 2000, which is circled in red on the right side of the graph here, the average density from those three sites is 6,600 abalones per hectare, and was selected because it represents the best estimate of sustainable densities supporting the ongoing fishery under the current conditions. The sustainable fishery level density at deep depths was established in the same fashion using the same data source, and this density is 3,300 abalone per hectare. These are values using the best available data, but we do recognize that certain limitations, which I'll mention later in the discussion of the management plan. But first, I would like to discuss the recovery portion of the plan. The geographical area involved includes the current moratorium area, excluding the area occupied by sea otters, and considers the individual status of all seven species of Southern California and red abalone along the San Mateo County coast and the Farallon Islands. As required, the plan provides both interim and long-term goals for recovery effort. Our interim goals are to reverse the decline of abalone populations that are in jeopardy of extinction, and to rebuild populations to a self-sustainability throughout their historic range. And by self-sustaining, we mean that populations can continue to survive on their own without any human aid. And finally, our long-term goal is to rebuild populations to fishable levels in at least three-quarters of their historic range. The conceptual framework of the recovery plan is shown here, and shows that recovery is intended to be a sequential stepwise process that relies upon changes in criteria to determine whether we should move to the next level in recovery assessment or continue at the current step. Two variables are used to assess the status of recovery at different points in time. One to assess recruitment, which is a size-based criteria, which we use in criterion one, and another is to assess changes in population abundance, which is a density-based criteria, which we use in criterion two and three. When criterion three has been satisfied, the population has reached the fishable level. As that stage approaches, we will initiate a planning process for fishery reopening, which we labeled fishery consideration, which is at the bottom there, where management, allocation, economic issues, and a possible network of no-take reserves are addressed. At this point in the planning and recovery effort, that stage appears to be many years away. The recovery of abalone populations to this stage will most likely take decades. The sequential stepwise process will require each recovery criterion to be satisfied before going on to the next one. To satisfy criteria one, the plan proposes to use a size-based measure, where we determine whether there are abalone within a broad size range in two different size groups. The first size group is intermediate sizes, or abalone that which fall between 4 inches and their recreational minimum legal size for each species. And then the second group is large sizes, that's any abalone larger than the recreational minimum legal size. This must occur in multiple areas, which we call index sites, to indicate that reproduction and growth are occurring on a wide spatial scale. Once criteria one has been satisfied, the plan proposes to shift to a density-based criteria. And the first criteria is density-based criteria is the minimum viable population, which is 2,000 abalones per hectare. Once that is satisfied, the last criterion is the sustainable fishery level, which is 6,600 abalones per hectare. And this has to occur at least 3/4 of the recovery areas. Data that will measure fulfillment of the spatial component of the criteria are collected within species-specific recovery areas that were determined using commercial landing block data and known recreational fishing areas. Each recovery area is large, such as an island. And the map you see in front of you is the recovery areas for red abalone. And you can see from this map, there are 5 recovery areas. We have the Central California San Mateo Coast and Farallones. We have 3 islands. We have San Miguel, Santa Rosa, Santa Cruz, and finally the coastline off of San Diego. And those are the 5 recovery areas for red abalone. Within each of the recovery areas, there are smaller areas called key locations where abalone were known to have occurred. From the key locations, we have picked a subset as index sites where the majority of the recovery assessment and enhancement activities will occur. Each criteria has a different spatial component to fulfill. Criteria 1 must be satisfied at all index sites. Criterion 2 densities must be achieved at all key locations. And criterion 3 needs to be satisfied at 3/4 of the recovery areas. The plan also addresses this potential loss of recovery areas. The plan recognizes that suitable abalone habitat within recovery areas may change over time to a point where there's no longer suitable for abalone. Therefore, alternative index sites may replace currently elected ones to account for environmental changes. It is also possible that the entire recovery area may become unsuitable for abalone recovery, for example, through otter reoccupation, disease, or pollution. If 50% of the recovery areas for a species is lost, the plan's preferred option suggests that the long-term recovery goal to a fishery cannot be achieved. Therefore, recovery to a fishery is not an option. And at that point, the interim goal of reestablishing self-sustaining populations becomes the long-term goal. Next, I would like to go over the contents of the abalone management portion of the plan. The abalone management plan considers the current free dive only red abalone fishery which occurs north of San Francisco Bay. And the plan will also apply to any Southern California abalone fisheries that reopen following recovery with adjustments to accommodate for the different species. Similar to recovery, we have developed both interim and long-term management goals. The interim plan has more coarse or crude management adjustments and is based on available funding and data that would become effective upon plan approval. The long-term plan has more refined management adjustments but requires more data, resources, and further development and funding. The interim plan suggests managing the fishery on a broad and fine scale using 2 management measures, an adjustable fishery-wide total allowable catch, and the ability to close severely depleted sites while stocks at those sites recover. Guidance on when changes in the management approach need to be considered are based on changes in several criteria we use to evaluate population health. Guidance on changing the management approach is laid out in several decision tables. The criteria used in the decision tables are listed here. The first 2 criteria are used in the TAC decision table, and criterion 3 is used in the area closure decision table. The first criterion is a measure of recruitment, or the addition of new abalone into the population. This criterion is based on the abundance of smaller adult abalone that have emerged from their cryptic boulder habitat. And for red abalones, this is abalones that fall between 4 and 7 inches. We're using this criteria to determine if there are adequate replacement of abalone to sustain the fishery. The second criterion uses density to evaluate changes within the fish population by using 2 density targets, sustainable fishery and MVP. For the first target, sustainable fishery, we use two density criteria. The first criteria is an overall density of abalone in all depths to determine whether population can sustain fishing pressure. We also use the density in deeper water to determine a rough assessment of the refuge population. And a deep water refuge is defined as anything greater than 27 feet, which is the depth beyond which most freedivers cannot reach. The second density target is the minimum viable population level, which is used to guide decisions on when fishery should be closed. And finally, the third criterion is a set of measures to help guide decisions on when site-specific closures should be considered. This second decision table is based on changes in catch per unit effort and changes in the distance traveled from access points to take abalone. The first decision table is the TAC decision table, and it uses the first two criteria, as I mentioned earlier. The measures of these criteria are obtained from 8 fishery index sites in Northern California. The plan organizes guidance or actions based on how the assessment of these criteria might change through time. Changes in two measurable criteria, recruitment and density, guide the actions that adjust the TAC and, under extreme conditions, potential fishery closure. In the event of fishery closure, it establishes the guidelines under which the fishery may be reopened. Although the decision table can guide the level at which the TAC is set, in reality, the interim plan relies on a limited set of management tools to regulate the take. These tools are the daily and annual limits and monthly or seasonal closures. Measures of criteria used in the area closure decision table are based on information obtained during our biannual creel surveys at eight fishery sites in Mendocino and Sonoma counties. The guidance in this decision table affects actions at individual sites. As in the TAC decision table, changes in the measured variables or criteria are used to suggest specific actions, such as additional density surveys, area closure, or reopen closed areas. And in this case, closure means area closure, not fishery closure. And the area that would be closed would be a defined area. The interim plan has several limitations that need to be recognized. First of all, data used to guide most of the management decisions under the interim plan come from only 4 heavily fished and 4 moderately fished sites. If these sites are not representative of other locations or the condition of the fishery beyond those sites, the decision could be biased, although it would be biased towards the conservative side of management. The TAC was calculated for the fishery as a whole and not allocated among sites. Consequently, individual sites can be overfished if a large portion of the TAC is taken from a small number of sites. The interim plan addresses this site depletion by suggesting individual site closures, but data collection and analysis can slow its response time. And finally, the methods used to control take are imprecise. The TAC adjustments must be made in large increments because fine-scale adjustments are not practicable at this time. Also, the TAC does not set an absolute limit on the take. We address some of these concerns in the discussion of the long-term plan. The long-term plan considers the use of 3 approaches: the use of zonal management, or the division of the fishery into zones or regional subunits that can be managed more effectively than a single unit. Also, we are proposing the use of abalone tags. These tags could be issued to limit take from individual zones and to identify legally taken abalone. And finally, we also need more and better fishery data collection to obtain refined zone-specific information to be able to carry out zonal management. The plan provides alternatives for management. The department's appraisal of each of these alternatives is discussed in detail in the plan. At this point in time, I will not go into any much detail because of time constraints. But suffice it to say that there are 7 alternatives listed in the plan. The first 4 alternatives apply to recovery areas within the moratorium area, and the last 3 suggest adjustments to the current Northern California fishery. And finally, the next thing I'd like to go over is a little bit of the summary of the public comment that was gathered from the 5 public comment meetings we had through all of last year, beginning in fall of 2003 on the draft plan. The public comment on the draft ARMP was diverse, and I only provide a very brief summary of the comments here. For more details and of the most common comments, please refer to the fact sheet, which we have on the table over here. And also, you can look at table G3 in appendix G of the ARMP, which has recorded all the comments from all those meetings. The comments can be broken out into broad categories pertaining to recovery, management, and miscellaneous, which are comments that covered both recovery and management issues. For recovery, some of the common themes and comments included comments on the recovery goals and criteria, opening a limited fishery within the moratorium area, and comments on concerns about withering syndrome and sea otters. For management, some of the common themes were opening the North Coast to commercial abalone fishing, utilizing constituents in management processes, punch card issues, concerns over a number of index sites, suggested regulation changes, and comments on alternatives. And then the common miscellaneous themes that were mentioned include poaching and MPA issues. And last, I'd like to just briefly go over some of the changes in the ARMP that have happened since the draft plan was given to the Commission back in late 2002. First of all, we rewrote the executive summary, and that has been included. Second, we've added an amendment to Alternative 1 in the plan, which we've labeled Option 1, and that basically was a suggestion to execute a limited fishery for red abalone at San Miguel Island, as well as propose some possible ways for assessment of joint assessment of the red abalone population at the island. Third, we added additional index sites into the interim plan. Originally, there were only 4 index sites, and we've doubled that to 8. And finally, we have added both the peer review summary, which was not available at the time when we submitted the draft ARMP back in 2002, and that is now Appendix F. And we also added the public comments that were gathered from the public comment meetings from the past year, and that's now in Appendix G. And that pretty much concludes the presentation. If there are any questions, I'll entertain them at this point.
Yeah, I'm just curious, and maybe I've missed the meeting and you've already done this, Ian, but Mike and I had requested that additional sites for the data search
right.
have been added. Have we got any different results from?
As far as monitoring those sites yet?
Yeah, monitoring
them. We've added them to the plan, but we have not had a chance to actually go and monitor them yet. Mm-hmm. That's on our agenda right now. In fact, we're supposed to be out diving this week or past couple weeks, but the weather up there has been cooperating with us. So,
any other comments or questions from the commission? Okay, we'll move on to public comment then.
Our first speaker will be Chris Goldblatt, followed by Jeff Baldwin. Chris? Okay, Jeff Baldwin, followed by Jim Marshall.
Hello? Okay. This is a suggestion for a Northern California rotational abalone fishery. I think we're to a point now where we're hearing that there's going to be 25 to 50 years for stocks to recover in Southern California. And I am suggesting that the sportsmen take one less abalone a day. We figure, my figures might not be totally right, but I think it's 3 million pounds a year that the sportsmen produce a year. And the department's constantly putting up roadblocks and getting, the last one was 92 citations and 120 abalones confiscated. And the sport fishery has been working very well up there for 100 years, and I think the stocks are healthy. And I'm suggesting that we share the take, whatever the take is in Southern California, and have the sportsmen drop one more abalone. Having the fishermen in place are going to ensure other people not poaching. Transponders on our boats will keep anybody from going out of line. I know as one, and I think every other diver would also just keep an eye out on the cliffs of people being more active than one trip up the cliff or burying their catch on the beach or whatever. We could help law enforcement. But I'd like to see, and what I don't have on here, is I would like to see the sportsmen pay $50 to $100 a year for their $24 tag, which would generate about $40 million for the Department of Fish and Game. And the commercial divers pay between $5 and $10 a pound tax via the processor for law enforcement and management. I think we all can work together at this point. I think Northern California divided into 10 blocks and works slowly and with the department that we can stop from over-harvesting an area and move on to the next. 10 years could go by before we would end up back in Bodega Bay area, and one of the suggestions here is from Bodega Bay to Shelter Cove. Anyway, I'd love a comment back from the department or from the commissioners on these suggestions, and that's about all I have to say. I think that's the answer. I think that the one thing I am leaving out, I think that the commercial divers are market fishermen, and they supply abalone for all the people who can't dive. And we're talking about a natural resource. The abalone belongs to all the citizens of California, not just people who can go sport diving. So anyway, I think we can generate enough money to keep it all in check, and I hope you take some of these suggestions seriously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jim Marshall, followed by Chris Goldblatt.
Good evening, commissioners. It's nice to see so many of you here. Earlier today, I saw Mr. Hattoy and Mr. Rogers, and I was thinking, oh, boy, well, at least they'll be here. But I guess Bob's indisposed or something. But yeah, it's been a long process, as the little handout here says. We had, you know, why did it take so long? And I think in this case that the fact that it did take so long, we've got a better document in front of us than we had. I'm sorry, I didn't explain who I am. My name's Jim Marshall. I'm the treasurer of the California Abalone Association. And if you read the documents, you'll find some of my contributions in it. And I'm, you know, it's been 8 years. We're frustrated with that time period. One issue is that the clock hasn't started yet on this interim plan that we're now we have 8 years of resource growth out here, and we don't know exactly what has happened in those 8 years, and now we're going to start the interim management, which in some areas basically the interim management was what we were doing in the 90s. The long-term management that's called for in the plan is basically gives us everything we ever wanted. As fishermen, the management would be so detailed that, you know, we'd have some, something to bank on, as we say. The status that we operated under and that we're looking at this point is, you know, basically uncertainty based on government budgets. And this is, I guess it's just the nature of the landscape, but we find ourselves here at another meeting. We've been doing this basically on the closure issues of the abalone fishery for 8 years and plus. It's been about 10 years because the process started a year or so before the closure went through. I really don't know what to say at this point other than, you know, let's go. Let's see about this getting to this long-term management plan. Let's see about changes that we can make when data indicates when precaution can be lessened. The idea that precaution, I mean, you know, it's a dangerous thing, as anyone who's in business knows. If you're too precautionary, you know, you don't get anything done. And if you sort of couch your life around precaution, you know, you're not going to be up there in the Fortune 500. So this idea that, you know, I understand how the current political landscape, political correctness is that, you know, we have to conserve and we have to be very careful, and certainly we do. But nonetheless, that doesn't relinquish us from our basic sort of human quality of being a risk taker. Like, you know, you can't get the fruit on the end of the tree unless you reach for it. And I think this limitation that's imposed on this fishery by the lack of government funding is a major issue. And as Ian and Pete and those at Fish and Game know, I've been working to see what the private sector can do to contribute to the data gaps, which keep us from fishing. This is one of the issues. Those of us who are still diving sea urchins at San Miguel Island have watched for 8 years while the resource has grown. And unfortunately, we don't have any scientific data, or there's very little data that corroborates what we've seen there. And it's just like now the clock starts on the interim plan, which is where we should have been 8 years ago. And it's just, it continues to be frustrating, and I think you'll get that sense for most of the guys that are going to speak today. I recently traveled to Australia, where I addressed the Tasmanian, in Tasmania, I addressed the Australian Abalone Convention, which is a nationwide convention of all the abalone producing states and all the industry people, all the managers and everybody. And I addressed them and told them about my optimistic view of what we could do with our fishery in California. And I have that optimism, and I have some plans, and I have ideas, but, you know, the fact that there's an abalone team that consists of two men in Southern California is a tough deal. We're going to find that, you know, without the funding that Ian spoke about, we're not going to go anywhere with this. And this is something, I don't know, you know, obviously the commission can't really change Fish and Game's funding, and neither can I change Fish and Game's funding, and certainly neither could Pete or Ian change the funding issues. But, you know, what are we trying to do here? I mean, who are we fooling? If we don't devote some resources to finding out what's going on with our resources, then we're just sort of like out in the cold, you know, because then we get to play the precautionary game and everybody feels good because you didn't hurt anything, but you destroy these economic infrastructures. And this has basically happened with the abalone fishery. We're just kind of hanging out. I mean, there's the guys in the room here that are still fishing, obviously, or in other fisheries, and some aren't fishing anymore, and they're waiting for maybe that possibility in the future to come back. So I think when this plan is approved, I imagine it's going to be approved. I don't see there's any more impediments for its final move as a fishery management plan. And under your aegis at the commission, we've got a lot of work to do on this plan. I mean, we spent 8 years with it, but it's not done. And this transition to the long term is going to take a lot more work and changes to that plan. So, you know, we'll be seeing you, basically. I mean, we'll be back, as our governor said once. Thanks.
Jim?
Thank you.
Will you be recommending that the commission, when they adopt the abalone recovery and management plan, to consider the new option one under alternative one?
Well, yeah, I still think that, obviously the plan calls for going that way if the alternative one is selected. And if you are going to manage the North Coast as they're managing it coming down, reducing tax and reducing the catch according to the best available knowledge there, we should operate the same way on fishing up. Fishing up into this area of 6,600, the justification for not fishing at 3,000, I can understand. I don't understand how you can fish down from 6,600 down to 3,000 and continue fishing until you get to 3,000 and then close it. But as you're building up, why isn't there provision for fishing on the buildup? You fished down, reducing your way as you came, and that, you know, I can see that might not be a good way to go. I mean, maybe we should look closer at zonal managements, but I'm not going to directly ask that you open up the fishery under option one anymore, because there's just not enough support for it. I mean, sure, the divers want to go diving, but you know, we don't get any support from the staff on that. And one of the misconceptions, I think, of most people who read option one is that you had to do a certain amount of data collection and move yourself out of a data poor situation before the fishery started. It didn't just immediately start a fishery. And that data collection before the fishery starts is integral to the idea of fishing in a discrete area, say San Miguel Island, or anywhere else for that matter. I see the option one as a sort of a pilot project for how to start how to reopen the fisheries, because if we just wait for all of these conditions to occur, as Jeff said, you know, 25 to 50 years is not an unreasonable estimate. We've seen how slow these animals do grow by watching what's going on out there, and you know, everybody pretty much agrees it's going to be a long process for some areas, and some areas obviously will never come back. So I think we're going to have to look at this finer scale zonal management based on finer scale zonal information, and we just got to get off the dime and get to it. And I have some other plans, and Pete and Ian are familiar with that, and we're working on that. But this is out in the future. I don't know, I just don't know how to put a real positive spin on everything. It's been tough, and it's going to continue to be tough, but I guess we'll just do what we can do.
Okay. We certainly understand your frustration, but we do need to, like Bob asked, hear from you guys. You know, maybe you don't like any of the options, but the best one that you'd like to see happen, we'd at least like you to say that's a starting point.
Well, certainly the alternative one is probably the most viable, or I'm not sure the number of the other alternative where you adjust the criteria that are being used, the 6,000, the numbers per hectare. This information based on three sites in Northern California may not be applicable to Southern California red abalone. You know, we don't know. This is a question that needs to be investigated. And, you know, I mean, the habitat's so different up north. They're compressed in a real small band along the coast. So it's, you know, to say that the areas around San Miguel Island should look just like the North Coast is a stretch. You know, maybe we can adjust those criteria as one of the option or one of the alternatives suggests, or maybe we can use those criteria in different areas as they come online. Again, though, the question of fishing up and fishing down and ratcheting down on the catches while you fish down, but not being able to fish from the bottom up, ratcheting up the catches as recovery occurs, that's something I've had a lot of trouble with, and it's I think that's an issue that we'll be looking at in the future.
Would you like to respond to that at all, Ian? Because he's making a pretty good point, as far as I'm concerned, about why not be able to fish
well,
up.
Well, we do also address that somewhat in this fact sheet. We've asked that. But basically, part of it, from it's the standpoint of where you are is where you're starting on that graph. And the current fishery in Northern California, we have the sustainable fishery level. We feel comfortable that if we ever fall below that, that by using a rationing down of take, that we could try to stem any further decline in the density. And that's our strategy. But eventually, if that does not work, we would have the option of closing at 3,000 abs per hectare. On the other hand, where we are in Southern California, we're working with abalone species which are at very low levels at this point in time. To be precautionary, we want to be able to build those resources up to a point where, you know, we can have a fishery. So I think it's more precautionary to advocate no fishing during that time to be able to reach our final goal. And also, the thing that you have to think about, if we do go towards one of those alternatives of a limited fishery during recovery, that would also prolong our timeline for recovery to our final goal of 6,600, because you're taking out those additional abalone that could be used as potential reproductive stock in recovery.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Chris Goldblatt, followed by Don Thompson.
Good evening, members of the council. My name is Chris Goldblatt. Now let me just go over a few of my credentials. I have a degree in fisheries and business from Humboldt State University. I've been involved in the import and the export of pretty much every major abalone fish around the world, South Africa, Tasmania, New Zealand, Baja here, of course, both the cultivated abalones and the wild abalones. So I have a pretty good idea of what it means to have a stable abalone fishery, either for sport or commercial. And there are many different management techniques utilized around the world. But the reason I've come here today is I made a startling discovery on my last trip to Northern California just before the last closure in June. And I collected these on the bottom at Hare River in Fort Bragg. These are otter kill. There's no doubt about it. I'm sure everybody in this room recognizes very well. There's only one animal in the entire world that can do this. Obviously, they don't pay attention to size limits. So, for a long time, the conventional wisdom is that there were no confirmed otter sightings in the north. I'm here to tell you that is not the case anymore. A gentleman doing the halibut survey for National Marine Fisheries, Jim Ponce, he's a very well-respected fisherman in the region, sighted one off Point Arena last year. So that's a period of at least a year that they've been up there, and their range is at least Point Arena to Hare Creek in Fort Bragg. That's, I think, 33 miles. Sightings are pretty infrequent, but it doesn't mean that the impact is any less. I realize you guys hear a lot of complaints about otters, and essentially the state is powerless to do anything about it. However, I think that there should be some mechanism or some plan, some cogent plan that the state has to interface with the federal government when they are delisted. In fact, they were supposed to be delisted this year. I have no idea where those numbers are. I think the number was 3,500. I haven't seen the last count of sea otters. But I imagine it's getting very, very close to that. So I would hope that the state has a plan for dealing with that issue when they are delisted. I think that the public should know, however well-intended this team here is, and you guys have done an excellent job, and I'm glad that you guys are here to take on this mammoth task of recovering and managing the abalone. However, the public does have a right to know that end, essentially, over the long term, it just simply cannot be achieved, even the management of it with the inevitable expansion of the sea otters. It just cannot happen. So unfortunately, that adds up to essentially, I hate to say it, but waste, which is very, very sad, because there's a lot of talent in this room. There's a lot of good motivation. Whatever has to be done in order to make an otter exclusive zone to the north, probably starting at the Golden Gate Bridge, extending all the way to the Oregon border, I think is in line if that resource up there is going to be essentially managed. If not, I think that we've seen what happens when the otters proliferate. You generally have 3 to 5 years before the fishery is extinct and defunct. We've seen that in Central California and more recently at the Coho pipeline off the ranch. So let's review my notes here. So anyway, that's if I could perhaps see a response in the minutes next time as far as what the council actually plans to do about the proliferation to the north. If I don't know what the capability that the state has to deal with this problem, but whatever it is needs to be ramped up. There's not a lot of political will to deal with the otters. It is a political issue, as I realize. Jobs are at stake. Jobs can be lost. It's very sensitive, and you do have to stick your neck out. But the time has come to act, and I implore you to act decisively, and the time is now. Thank you.
Don Thompson, followed by John Colgate.
Good evening, commissioners and members of our department. My name is Don Thompson. I'm a former commercial abalone diver. I dove for 2.5 years immediately prior to when the fishery was closed. I bought my permit through a transfer program where I had to buy 2 existing permit holders' permits, negotiate with them, and the department retired 1 permit. So I invested quite a bit of money for my permit, over $20,000, and invested, you know, basically my life savings in my boat, my permit, and all my dive gear. And I was very active in the political process, both at the Fish and Game Commission level and during the consideration of the original closure and the legislative process that created this plan that you're reviewing right now, as I'm sure Mr. Trainer would recall. And I'd like to point out that the commercial divers were very strong advocates when this legislation was being drafted, that the commission have the authority to regulate, to manage the resource and to regulate and make a decision here. And that was a result that actually materialized, you know, with the final draft of the legislation. And that we were strong advocates from day one that the appropriate place for the decision to be made was with the Fish and Game Commission. And during the legislative process, we were promised by the author of the legislation that there would be mitigation to those of us that were impacted and were put out of business. And that never materialized. And I confronted the author, Senator Mike Thompson, staff about why they had not included any mitigation as promised. And the response I got was, well, we were going to try to get you guys a job retraining program, but we checked into all the job retraining programs and we couldn't find anything that would apply. And so we were going to try to get you guys some loans, but we looked at all the federal loan programs and so on, and we couldn't find anything that would apply. And we were going to try to get you guys sea urchin permits because a few of us, like myself, didn't have any other alternative fisheries that we could use our boats because the permits were restricted and so on, and we dove exclusively for abalone. But the department didn't want to go along with that because they felt that the sea urchin fishery didn't need any additional pressure and so on. So that was why we took out the mandatory language of the moratorium and made it so that once the management plan's done, the Fish and Game Commission, if they make a finding that the resource can sustain or support additional harvests, that and those findings are consistent with the management plan, that they have that they can reopen the fishery at any time once the management plan is finished. So that's a little bit of history for you. I was noticing in the slideshow earlier that the density data presented for Southern California, the chart, the timeline stops in 1996, which is just before the fishery was closed. And it doesn't continue for the last 10 years to show any increase in densities in Southern California. So I'm a little bit disturbed with that, compounded by the fact that the following presentation of density criteria from Northern California was in the early 2000s when the 6600 data was presented. So, you know, I'm kind of disappointed that we're still looking at a chart that stopped in 96 and showed a decline and hasn't showed any recovery, you know, from the department. I'd like them to present from 96 to the current what's happened with densities in Southern California. I think that would be very valuable to see how much recovery has been accomplished. And there's some inconsistencies here with the density data because that was the focus of a lot of debate and a lot of discussion at the time the fishery was closed before the commission, because the divers were confronted with a closure which wasn't, it was saying there wasn't enough abalone, but it didn't say how much was okay. It didn't really say. And so we sat back and we said, well, you know, we can't really argue whether it's enough, but tell us how much is enough. And because we didn't feel that they had about, you know, real accurate density data about the resource that we were fishing. And so at the time of the closure, the commission enacted an emergency moratorium for 90 days. And they filed documentation with the Secretary of State through the Office of Administrative Law, and I have a copy of that here. And basically, the data or the densities at that time that were being characterized as being good densities were 600 to 1,000 abalones per hectare at the Channel Islands in Southern California, and which had declined from 10 years prior, or, you know, at the time of the closure, to around supposedly 1 to 200 abalones per hectare. And but we all felt like that wasn't the real density that was out there. And we asked the department to go look where we were diving and go get better data, because we felt that if they had the data, that it would support that the fishery was abundant and was healthy. And so the divers joined forces with the department and went out and did more surveys and came back with densities between 1,500 and 2,000 abalones per hectare at San Miguel Island. And we felt like, hey, we've been vindicated. Like, there, you know, now let's go back to work. Well, the legislation superseded the commission's authority and mandated that it be closed until this management plan was complete. But what concerns me is that we come back 8 years later and we're told that we need a minimum density that matches those on the North Coast of 6,600 per hectare, and that density goal is going to take decades or even centuries to complete. So, you know, I don't feel like that's a real reasonable density goal, you know, considering how long we've waited. And I'd like to see the department be consistent with what we were told at the time of the closure and have a lower target density goal, which is reasonable and is capable of being achieved in a reasonable amount of time. And I'm a little bit concerned about the department's choice of no regulation change and using the Administrative Procedures Act process, the procedural process that were that's being used to adopt the plan, because the explanation I've been given is that we can use the Administrative Procedures Act if there's no regulatory change being proposed. If there's going to be regulatory changes, or changes to regulations, then the proper procedure is the CEQA process, which I'm sure you're familiar with other issues that you've been dealing with. And under CEQA, the definition or the fundamental premise for CEQA is that the alternative that's being proposed has to be feasible. And there's an evaluation process, and there's very specific guidelines. And the definition of feasible under CEQA is capable of being achieved within a reasonable amount of time. So I would argue or like to suggest that the other alternatives that have been presented here are more feasible because they could be achieved in a shorter amount of time. That with a lower density or some level of fishery, or, you know, there's a lot of other alternatives, but all those other alternatives would necessitate a regulatory change, which would necessitate a different process. So I'd just like to make you aware of that, because to me, I'd like to be able to go diving again and be able to go get some abalone and resume, you know, the occupation that I'd set my heart into. But I don't see it happening with the plan that you have right now and the way this thing's going. Now, I've been a strong advocate that we use biomass to evaluate the resource. And I understand, you know, how difficult that is and how and everything. And I haven't gotten the department over the last 10 years to give me a biomass estimate of how much resource we're talking about and how many abalones. It's surprising to me that they feel that the Northern California fishery is a sustainable one without knowing or making a biomass estimate and without getting a handle on what rate of exploitation is being used or how much resource is being exploited. You know, is it 2%, 5%? Because if you take the harvest statistics and you work the math backwards, you could say if we're using 2% of the resource, and this is how many that's being taken, then this is what the population should be. And what I'd like to ask the department to do is to take a look at that 6,600 abalone per hectare and do the math over how much habitat you want to have, how many hectares of habitat you're designating for recovery. And give us a number. Is this several million or several billion or trillions of abalone? Because what's happened with the absence of this kind of information is that these abalone populations that are south of San Francisco get characterized as being small and isolated populations. And that's really not the case. But without some sort of idea about the biomass, you know, where do we stand? How do we judge whether it is or isn't, you know, a resource that needs to be protected? And finally, you know, I'd like to see you couple the plan that Jim Marshall has presented to go collect the density data and, you know, trust us and give us your assurance that if we can go out there and substantiate that there's a viable resource and that there's a, you know, tell us what you feel is a reasonable rate of exploitation. 1% or, you know, 1/100th of 1%? Tell us what, for every one abalone that you would allow us to take for a commercial fishery, how many you would like there to be in the population? Is it 10,000? Is it 100,000? A million? I don't care. I would just like to feel like there's an honest effort being made that if there's a resource that can be utilized, that we can somehow work to a point where we can agree that there's a reasonable number that could be fished for that won't harm the resource. And so that's basically what I'm asking, is that, you know, we'd be allowed to go out and say, this is how many abalone there is at San Miguel Island, or this one particular reef. And if those densities exceed the density criteria that the department has set forth, give us a fishery and let us start fishing again. Give us a quota to take a few of those animals. And the beauty of this whole thing is that you would be making the decision with very high level of confidence in what the resource was. And you wouldn't just be saying, well, we're going to wait until there's this many abalones per hectare throughout, you know, all of Southern California. So I don't think it's necessary to keep one island closed if there's an abundance of resource at another island, or to have 75% of all of Southern California recovered. You know, I'd like to thank you for being generous in the amount of time that you've given to comment and to consider some of the other alternatives in the plan.
Thank you. What is the reason that we don't have comparable data over the last 10 years for the southern region, and not for the whole 10 years, but some comparable data that since 1996 that we can see what has happened? What is the reason for that?
We do have some data from San Miguel Island. For the other species in Southern California, we don't have that good of data. Where we've looked, we haven't found that many abalone. That's the problem. The abalone resource, the pink and the green and the white and the blacks. The blacks, we probably have the best information as far as the numbers in the resource in Southern California. The other ones, we don't. Personnel problems, boat problems, just getting out there and getting the data is a major logistical impediment.
It would be good to see what has happened since 96.
Over the past two years or so, we have begun systematic surveys of the abalone resources in Southern California, particularly Catalina Island and San Diego, and we're seeing. And for black abalone, some of the other San Nicolas and one of the areas along the coast, central coast, and we're seeing signs of recovery. We're seeing juvenile recruitment. We're seeing aggregations of larger pinks and greens. And we're finding increased numbers of pinks, for example, in some areas and greens.
Try an on and off.
Yeah.
What are the counts?
We're not doing density transects. What we're doing now, we're in the first criteria where we're going out and measuring size distributions. And some of the areas at Catalina, we're actually getting a broad size distribution of sizes. But this is at one site. What that tells us is that there's reproduction occurring, because we're seeing small animals, we're seeing intermediate sizes, and a couple of the old legal-sized abalone. Other areas, like San Diego, we're seeing we're seeing moderate numbers of larger and intermediate-sized pinks, but we haven't identified areas for the juveniles yet. But there's got to be juveniles out there somewhere, because we're seeing the little bit larger ones. They do grow. But these are isolated areas. We haven't looked at all the recovery sites or the index sites, recovery areas. So we are seeing these good signs at a few locations throughout Southern California, and we're still continuing to do these surveys. We have some volunteers. We have volunteer scientific divers from some of the aquarium. We're working with Scripps people. who are working with abalone, and there's two of us in Southern California that are doing all these dives, and it's a slow process.
I think
I'm sure the department understands that we are being asked as a commission to adopt an abalone plan when the department does not have the counts.
To more directly answer that question, the data you saw in the graph regarding Santa Rosa Island, those surveys have continued at Santa Rosa Island, and we can provide you with that graph at the next meeting that will show the in-between data. Those are Park Service data. They're using the same methodology,
and
the numbers haven't changed.
Was he accurate about the difference that the count was 1,500 to 2,000 when in fact there was a reported one that was significantly lower?
I don't know the specifics about what he was asking about. However, it's clear that the resource at San Miguel Island is at a much higher level. The red abalone resource is at a much higher level than most of Southern California. I mean, that's clear. Nobody's going to argue that point. And that is one location that's included in this plan for recovery. The act, the closure legislation, does require more than just one site to recover, and that's what's
Oh, I understand that. I'm not suggesting that lets the whole thing off.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean that it gets... Well, hidden is not the right word.
No.
It doesn't mean that the full disclosure is not absolutely necessary, particularly for this commission.
I think it would be appropriate for us to bring you some of the data from San Miguel Island that we have.
I also thoroughly understand, John. I mean, you know, the hit the department took today on budgets is just symptomatic of what's been going on over the last several years. And I understand why it is that we have two guys, and I understand the difficulty of doing that. Having said that, you know, I don't know how you get out from under that, except that here we are faced with an abalone recovery plan without the resources for you guys to apply to a problem that you know you've got. And that's very frustrating for us all.
And I think
the least of whom would be the guys in the room.
In part, fishermen like Jim Marshall, who are coming up with great alternatives for helping us do the research.
I know we discussed this actually. We had this discussion just we touched on it the other day. But to what extent can we involve and have you been able to involve the other guys?
Volunteers are difficult, and fishermen do present a unique case because they are skilled and have a lot of observation powers that the average person doesn't, because they're out there doing dives now for urchins or other fisheries. The difficulty has always been in regards to legal requirements and getting authority to dive with people outside the department. We are working through that. We are also working closely with the urchin divers to develop a program where they can go out and collect data during their working dives that is usable scientific data. And we're ground-truthing their methods to make sure that we're okay with them.
Yeah,
and that type of thing can work.
It would seem obvious to me, John, that the extent to which we could recruit volunteers out there in the resource, I personally wouldn't even care if I were you what their scientific method was. Because when they said there was a huge population out there, then you go ground truth it and find out whether that was the case or not. And it would obviously be beholden to them to not be inaccurate, because then you would be suspicious of virtually everything they said thereafter.
Sure.
So, I mean, to me, that would be a very valuable thing to do, and it would take the burden off of the department, which has no budget.
No cars.
Right. Let's move on with the public testimony before we do run out of time and stuff. And just understand, guys, me in particular, but I think all the commissioners have always felt like the people who make a living at a fishery are the ones that are more concerned about it than anybody. Otherwise, they're not going to have a fishery to make a living at. So we believe that you guys know what's going on out there, and we're listening to what you got to say. So,
yeah, my name's John Colgate. I was the president of the California Abalone Association when the fishery closed. I'm a member of the Recreational Abalone Advisory Committee. that advises to the director. I'm a member of the Commercial Abalone Advisory Committee. And I'm glad to see the plans here. It's a logical plan. I take some exceptions with some of the densities and some of the other things like that. But one of the things I'm going to talk about tonight is the attitude of the plan, which kind of lets nature take its course. And I don't really think we have that option. The sea otters are eventually going to come down, and they're talking about moving the southern boundary down to Ventura now. And there's a in the option one, alternative one, there's a lot of abalone on at San Miguel. I'm a sea urchin diver. I'm out there looking at them almost every day. And San Miguel very successfully supported the fishery, and it wasn't a disputed area when the fishery was closed. Everybody agreed that it was a good productive area. That area's had 8 years now to recover, and there's a lot of abalone out there, really a lot. And one of the things that I would do with that island is do some limited harvest, and I would take a significant amount of that money and use that to recover the other islands of, say, Santa Rosa and Santa Cruz, the two neighboring islands. And, when I left the fishery 8 years ago, I was getting $50 a piece for red abalone. I'm rumored now that they're up to 100. So we have really a lot of money at our disposal here. We've also got $200,000 that the commercial abalone divers put into an enhancement fund that's been sitting there, and we've been waiting to do some enhancement work with this fund, and we've been working with the Fish and Game, and they've got some really limited resources. They've had to write this plan, and that's taken a lot of their resources. And we'd like to, and we're talking with them right now about using some of that money to go out and put some index sites out at San Miguel and actually quantify and see exactly what we've got out there. And with that amount of money, we can not only do that, but we can do a lot of enhancement work and a lot of recovery work. And saying the main thing about not having a fishery out at San Miguel, Fish and Game is saying that they need those stocks to recover the neighboring areas. But I think if we manipulate the abalone and we can translocate adults and we can translocate seed, we can use our money to recover these other areas faster than just nature doing it. And I think, you know, we've got some money, and I think it's a good plan. And I think there's a time frame because of the sea otters. You know, we need to get something going, and you've got a whole room full of guys willing to get out there and work. And we don't want a lot of money for this stuff, but we want to see a fishery going, and we want to see some of that money go to recovery. And you guys don't have any money at all, and it's a perfect situation. This collaborative research is going on. I'm doing collaborative research with the Fish and Game industry, and we're being trained by some department representatives on what to do out there, and I think we can do a good job out there, and we have money to ground truth the stuff that we do. So we've got a plan, and we've got some money to do it, and I see just letting it sit is just a losing proposition. There's no possibility there, and it's just not happening. So I'd really like you guys to consider what we're doing. I'd like you to really encourage the department to work with us and come up with a plan to start using our money to see what is out at San Miguel, and we'd like to come back with you guys with some figures and maybe sit down and talk about how we can start enhancing the other areas and get some going, because we want to go. You know, I love diving, and I want to keep diving, and I want to dive abalone before I'm gone. Thank you.
John, there's no reason that the department would be against, is there, the department would be against getting some help from the industry?
No.
Or is there?
No, not at all.
No, I mean, I've never sensed that.
We're discussing it with them now, and we're working with them on Urchin, and yes, it's the only way to go with regards to data collection.
Particularly given where we all find ourselves budget-wise. I mean, it seems to me because I've never heard from anybody from the department a reluctance to want to do that myself. I've never heard it. And so in all of our discussions, I've never sensed that. Mm-hmm. So I would think that we can get this thing going.
My name is Jeff Baldwin.
If I keep letting everybody jump up without having a card in and speaking in their turn and everything,
minutes,
we're never going to get
please,
done.
Please, 2 minutes.
The suggestion that I added here with this Northern California fishery sharing one-third of the take of the sport will support the department and have all the money you guys need and check the poaching problem in Northern California. Thank you for letting me speak again.
The only comment I would make on that is that my experience has been that the bureaucracy is so bad for the department to be able to accept outside money that it probably never happened.
Well, it would just be tax dollars, tax per pound harvested by the commercial, and money being spent for tags for the tagging method you have now of the punch card. But raising that punch card to $50 to $100 per sport diver, be plenty of money to do what we need to do.
Thank you. Let's move on to the next speaker.
Father Time. Oh, Steve Reebuck. followed by Laddie Handelman.
You got that part right. Thanks, Mr. Trainer. My name is Steve Reebuck. I'm from San Luis Obispo. I wanted to preface my remarks by saying that I no longer represent the commercial divers. I did that for about 20 years. I loved it. I grew up in a commercial fishing family, started diving as a kid when I was in 1956. I was 9 years old. And I have to say that what occurred in 1997 was one of the worst experiences of my life. The first version of what was called SB 463 that I saw and that I worked on the first couple of months of the abalone closure was an enhanced poaching bill. Had nothing to do with closing the fishery. I later found out there was two versions of this bill being shopped around. One was the poaching bill, and the other one was the draconian close the fishery bill. I have both copies, if anybody doubts this. The data used by the department at the time, I think, was very unfair. It's fishery-dependent data, which is your least reliable source. And the strategy at the time for my clients primarily was when the fishery opened up in the spring, they'd go out and fish. They made more money fishing urchins. So they would fish abalone. Then they'd switch over to urchins. At the end of the year, they'd get another little lick at the abalone and wait to the end. The evidence that they were respecting this resource and really protecting it is that the short beds existed. We went out in 97 and videotaped the bottom along the coast, along the mainland, some of the islands, and showed these short beds. There were very few legal abalone, but there was a lot of shorts. So, I personally think that this whole thing was unnecessary. The divers in 97 were willing to go to quotas. They were willing to do a lot of things that would have kept them in business and helped to protect the resource, but it wasn't to be done. Now, at the time, they were fishing at approximately 1% of the emergent biomass, which is animals that are about 3 or 4 inches and larger, up to 12 inches. That 1% represented 45,000 to 50,000 legal red abalone, and that's 7 3/4 and larger, with a weight of about 200,000 pounds. Since there isn't good data, as you heard from Mr. Hawker, If one is just to take those numbers, let's say 45,000 and 200,000 individuals and 200,000 pounds and extrapolate it forward, right now, the way I see it, there's hundreds of thousands of legal abalone and millions of pounds out there somewhere. I don't know where they went if they're all gone. But the downside has been that the field work has not been done as promised. When I was involved in this, we were told we'd have a fishery management plan in 18 months and the fishery would be considered to be reopened. As you heard, it's 8 years now. Okay, thank you. One of the jobs I had when I was working for the abalone divers was as a technical consultant to the Southern Seattle Recovery Team, and I held that position for 11 years. The chairman of that team was Dr. Doug DeMaster. In 1996, DeMaster did a survey of the state all the way from Oregon down to the Mexican border. And what he found was that there were areas of rock, there was areas of mixed rock and sand, and then areas of sand. Now, I've included his paper in my handout to you. And what I did was I just extracted out the hard rock substrate and the mixed substrate and came up with a number of 305 square nautical miles. Okay. Now, based on densities of red abalone in the sea otter range, the literature suggests that there's somewhere between 75 red abalone per hectare up to a higher number of 1,000 per hectare. So just using that number of 305 square nautical miles, I come out with a population of red abalone at somewhere between almost 8 million individuals and 115 million individuals. And I guess since we're all in this precautionary mode, I would lower that then to about 4 million to about 60 million. So, but the point being that there's a lot of habitat and there are a lot of abalones, and all I've done is cited the department's own literature. These are been published for years. So what I'm getting at here is Mr. Taniguchi has suggested that we have to have 6,600 per hectare before we can have a viable fishery. The way I see it, you've got a bank. You got 305 square nautical miles of bank with tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of red abalone. I think if you take that into consideration, that number of 6,600 can be lowered substantially down to something more reasonable, let's say the 3,000 level. Now, I'm as frustrated as some of these other guys. I'm pushing 60, and all I want to do is be able to go with my kids in the neighborhood where I live, where I know there's legal red abalone. I can't do that now. I have to go to Northern California. It's 8 hours each way. You got to stay in a hotel or stay with a friend, or you got to buy food, and you got to, you know, it's really an expensive proposition. Or I can go 10 miles from where I live. Be a lot easier. And I think there's, as I've shown here, a viable resource. Now, I know you're getting close to decision time here, but I'd like to suggest that you go through another peer review process. And I've identified four individuals. There's others. Richard Burge, Earl Ebert, Steve Schultz, Paul Wild, for example. They're all abalone specialists. Produced tremendous work over the years. I'd like to see this plan peer-reviewed by your own retired people, because you've got some darn good people. One of the things that I did send you a couple of years ago was an abalone quota plan. There is support within the fishery for quotas. I think that the quota fishery would have to be extended to the recreational component as well. You need to have some way of monitoring the harvest of sport abalone. Mr. Taniguchi mentioned the tagging system. We came up with that probably 15 years ago. Your game wardens support it. You do it with birds. You do it with deer. You do it with other animals. It's not a big deal to tag them. When this subject came up in 97, we found tags that you could encode people's permit numbers, any information you want to on those tags for 7 cents a piece. Not expensive. So I think that is the end of my presentation. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. And I appreciate the opportunities. Thanks.
Mr. Trainer, I would appreciate it if you didn't refer to Steve as Father Time, since I'm 6 years older than he is.
I'm mistaken more often for Santa Claus, and that's a real honor.
I couldn't resist since he changed his appearance since the last time I've seen him.
Well, I'm a contractor now, Bob, and this is my sunscreen. It protects me from the outdoors. Okay.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you. Laddie Handelman, followed by Bob Duncan.
Can you hear me okay? Okay, I'm Lad Handelman. I came here tonight for entertainment, mostly. I hadn't been to a fishing game or fishery meeting for many, many years. But I want to say a few words. I want to give you a lot of thoughts, maybe a dozen or so, and if one of them is worth something, then at least my time we're worthwhile. I come here not as a fisherman. I have nothing to gain as a fisherman. I come here not as an advocate for anything. But as a citizen of California, I pay a lot of taxes, and I own part of the resources. I'm a part owner of those abalone, same as the rest of you. And I care about paying taxes, and I care about my share of those abalone. I want to talk about a few variables. One variable is the fisherman, the commercial. One variable is recreational fishing. One variable is the population explosion in along the coast, and the pollution that comes from the population explosion. And another variable is, I forgot that one. I'll get back to it. Okay. But my history is at about 16, 17 years old, I found myself in Morro Bay as a commercial diver until I could learn something else. And I saw, and I knew divers working there for 15 years, 20 years before me, worked the same exact reefs. Beckett's Reef is an example, off the radar station, off Cambria. There are known small areas of reef that get worked day after day by the same divers, and they cull through a few thousand abalones a day to pick out the few legal ones that were over 8 inches. And there was never a difference year to year about the take, 20, 25 dozen a day, almost year in and year out. So I submit that the commercial fishery does not reduce the population if that's all that's going on. The impact of commercial fishing doesn't do it. There's too much evidence for many years in that part of our fishery and other parts that show that demonstrate that. I submit the loss of the fisheries came about primarily when the sea otters hit that area. They came down from Monterey, and the Fish and Game at that time declared officially that sea otters did not eat abalone. But we all know how accurate they were. And they weren't doing a very good job then, and from what I hear, they're not doing a much better job today when they want to shut the fishery down because they don't have the information. I think it's a sad excuse to shut down a fishery and my chance of eating my abalone because the fishing game hasn't done a good job. That's to me a sad excuse. I'd be ashamed. I like your questions, Mr. Rogers. Why not involve the fishermen to help their own fishery and at the same time produce valuable information to make good decisions? You don't have that. The burden should not be on the fishermen to prove their case because they weren't even listened to. The burden should be on the Fish and Game Department to prove their case before they arbitrarily shut the whole fishery down because they haven't done a good job. I think that's a travesty. And you commissioners are supposed to oversee this stuff. I hope you can live up to your obligations and not get caught up in the political part of it. Okay. What I saw is I came to, I'll jump around a bit. I came to Southern California and took up my commercial diving in Southern California in the Anacap Island up to San Miguel. And again, year after year, the fishery was sustainable. About that time, the sport diving business took off, where one sport boat might carry out 60 and 70 divers and go and park on a reef with a bunch of divers who wanted to go home and take trophies home or something home. If they couldn't find a legal one, they'd pick an illegal one. What the heck, they're only out there once or twice a year. They got to bring something in. They had no motive to preserve the fishery. They were not incentivized to police each other. That one man went out there with his little bag to fill up with something. So legal or illegal, he'd fill it up. And it was impossible to police all this. Today, those same, or before the fishery closed, those sport boats multiplied by in the hundreds, and they're armed with GPS systems. That means they can target the same exact spot, not just the same reef. They can be within 10 feet of where they were last time, and systematically not clean out the reef. They're not supposed to pick the shorts, but anyone who's been around the waterfront, and I'm sure the fishing game would test, it's impossible to police all that. It happens every day by thousands of sport fishermen who are out there because we can't police them. They all have only one trip a year, two trips a year. What's that going to hurt? It hurt a lot. The commercial fishery being bundled into the whole pile as a fishery. I submit that should not be the case. The commercial fishery have been good farmers taking care of their stuff. If anything, if one of their kind is guilty of picking illegal abalones, I've seen them report that person because they don't want them in the fishery. So, point being that left to their own devices, a fishery can be, commercial fishermen will not deplete a fishery at all. That's my position. I came back to the fishery. I went for some years into offshore oil diving and construction. I founded a company named Oceaneering International from scratch with four other abalone divers. And in short time, we became the world's largest international diving company in 24 countries. I was president. We got to be a public company. Today, still traded on Wall Street, New York Stock Exchange, worth over $1 billion. So I've seen competence. I've seen incompetence. I've seen management systems. And I learned a little bit from doing all that. I came back. My dream was to go and get my license again to once again, after 15 years of being gone, to go out and fly the bomb again. I got in the lottery. I won my license back. I did not need the money. I loved the idea of it. I went to Santa Cruz Island, and there was very many healthy abalone out there. The bottom was very healthy. Within a three or four-year time span, so all I was at it for, I saw the bottom turn from red algae and lustrous bottom growth to turn gray with ash under these long ledges we have out there. A man or a sailor can't even reach in there. That's impossible. It's where the emergent abalone first come out from below the rocks and hide back at those microscopic size ledges. They come out about 3 or 4 inches in size. And you could look back in there and see tens of thousands of them. And I have no reason to lie about this. I have no incentive, but just please believe me, okay? Within 2 or 3 years, at the end of it, I found none of them. And I didn't happen because divers picked them out. I submit it's the uncontrolled population and pollution, sewage treatment plants, pesticides out of Camarillo that came up with the current and wiped out those lower islands. Also, maybe be the reason behind the the disease we had, the foot disease. And more and more pressure being put on the what islands were left, but from the sea otters having come down, with no more fishery up north, and with fewer abalone in the southern islands that had come up, more pressure was put on the northern islands. I saw San Miguel full of abalone, I mean tens of thousands of them on the reefs, and they were, and that remained. The sport fisheries would pound certain reefs and take them out. But I left the fishery again. At that time, I broke my neck, and I love doing that, but I couldn't do it anymore. But I'm here today to say that the fisheries have got a bad rap. They didn't do it. And given the chance, they won't do it again. They won't do it. I would suggest a radical idea here, just hearing this talk tonight, is that instead of all the speculation and unknowns that you're all trying to make sense out of, and nothing's going to happen out of that except more and more unknowns all the time, take San Miguel. Let the guys do a survey of it. Isolate it. For scientific reasons, turn the commercial guys loose on that island and see how sustainable that one island is. Not open to recreational fishing. And give a 5-year shot to these guys. And just watch and see that the poundage may be high at first because it hasn't been touched. But once it reaches a plateau, it won't go down because they will not pick the shorts. They'll keep it in good shape. And if that happens, then you'll know the problem is not the fishery overfishing. It's all these other variables. And how you deal with that, I don't know. But as long as you put in the fisheries and not the pollution and not the otters, you're not going to get anywhere. Anyway, that's my little two bits. Anybody got any questions?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Bob Duncan, followed by Leonard Marcus.
Good evening. I'll try and keep it really short because a couple of things have already been discussed. But I think on the management plan, if you're going to accept it, I think you should at least have the Fish and Game, since they were going to go this week, but the weather was bad. Maybe they'll go next week and start their surveys, because the same answers that I heard tonight are the same answers I heard in 201, 2000, and 202 the last time I went. The weather was bad. The boats were down. They're just about ready to go. All this stuff is predicated on you knowing what the facts are, and you can't take three sites in Northern California and say that's what the figures are for Southern California, because if that's the case, San Miguel is ready to go now, and I bet you if they haven't looked at Northern California in 4 or 5 years, I bet you those sites up there aren't even there now. So if you're going to develop a plan, it should be more. You should get into what you're saying, what is going to degrade a spot and make it specific so it's up front, but have the survey before you adopt the plan at whatever figures that you're talking about. And when Colgate said that he wants to spend the money, and the Fish and Game said, yeah, it's a great idea, I put some of that money in, and I don't think it's a very good idea. They're mandated to look and do the survey. We put in $410,000 into a fund, and they've taken out already a quarter of $1 million. They charge 23% to look at after that money. So I'm sure they're real happy to go out and do the survey on our money. But I don't think we should be financing it. Then on the other quarter of $1 million, on the other two plans, they had final say on what was being done. They're doing one right now to look at the problems of one that they said that you can't outplant larval. Now they're looking at predators for larval. If it isn't worth looking at the first time, if it's already been shut down, why would you spend another $50,000 on it? I think you guys should look at your team and, you know, whatever it takes to come up with state money to do the survey, and then develop, and then authorize the plan. Don't authorize the plan, and, well, these guys are still telling you that they're going to go look at a survey. Thanks.
Leonard Marcus.
Hi, my name is Leonard Marcus. I'm a urchin diver now. And I work today. It's one of our 2 days a week. I used to dive abalones and sea urchins, so I'm a wreck because I just got off my boat. I'm here to tell you that the abalone at San Miguel Island, I think, are above 6,600 per hectare, especially if I could pick three spots like was done in Northern California, we could come up with higher numbers than that. I've tried to put fish and game when the biologists were out there doing their surveys on areas in Tyler's Bight where there's literally abalone side by side, clustered up as far as you can see, you know, tens of thousands of them. And you can't do, it seems like the scientists, the biologists have this mindset that you can pick an arbitrary spot, mark an X, do a transect, and this will give you an accurate idea of how many abalone are out there. And it's never been the case. At least I started diving abalone in the early 80s, so it was really at the end of abalone diving. But when I started, there were never abalone everywhere. There were scattered abalone grazers in certain areas, and then there were the short beds that most of us worked through again and again, like Ladd said, and you would get your, when I was diving, it was 4 or 5 dozen a day. And we went through year after year, and you could pull abalone out of these beds. And, of course, now these beds are just, there are so many legal abalone and babies. And I was diving Talcott today, and there are grazing 2-inch, 4-inch, 6-inch abalones everywhere. The kelp beds, a big part of abalones and sea urchins are that the kelp beds shrink and then they grow. And this is, right now we're in probably the largest kelp bed expansion I've ever seen. I've been diving, I started tanning in the early 70s, and I started diving sea urchins in about 1977. I've seen two cycles that are like this, but nothing, the kelp is quite honestly, it's unbelievable. There's bottom coming up at Talcott 5 miles offshore, 60-foot bottom. I was driving home today, seeing kelp in areas I'd never seen kelp. I'm going to have to look at them for urchins. I'm sure there's abalone there. I was in 30 feet a mile off the island, and like I was saying, I'm seeing baby abalone out there. There really needs to be, all I'm trying to get to, and I'll stop, is that there isn't sufficient data, really. You guys don't have the data. I think Marshall has a really good idea. I'd like to put forth something that Jeremy Prince, who's a biologist in New Zealand, told me that they feel that the larval that abalone only propagate other abalone within a couple hundred yards. So this idea that the abalone at San Miguel Island are somehow going to magically make abalone at Santa Cruz Island or at Santa Rosa Island, it really doesn't work that way. There's a reserve, like Steve was telling you about. There's abalones in areas that nobody's ever dove. You know, that's this kelp that's coming up miles offshore. There could be abalone out there. There are abalone in some spots. I was going to talk about otters. Otters have been covered. But really, you guys have to understand, there's 100 sea otters now at Coho. If they come down the coast, are we saving these abalones for sea otters? Because sometimes it seems ridiculous to me. It seems like that's the plan, that for some reason I'm a second-class citizen. Feeding my family isn't a good reason to harvest abalone, but an otter going through an area and taking them all, that's okay. It's perfect. In otter turf, there can be 3 or 4 abalone as far on a reef as far as you can see. Down here we're talking about areas where there could be 10,000 abalone in the size of this room. So I just like to say, between pollution, sport diving, we've really gotten a bum rap. And if you guys really knew what the number of abalone were, at least at San Miguel Island, I think you'd consider opening the fishery, at least as a, some kind of a fishery. So thank you.
Comments or questions before? That was the last speaker from the commission.
Well, as somebody who I think was, I don't know how long ago we had a hearing in Santa Rosa, it was over a year ago, I believe. And that's where the first place that I insisted that Jim and I had come up with the idea of including more sites. And I think what struck me was there was a great... quite a few of the divers out there, and I think there was a club, as a matter of fact, that offered to help the department with the assessment of its sites and collecting data. We need to do a much better job of using those resources out there. I mean, the only way we're going to be successful, given the budget limitations that we have, are these public-private partnerships. Now, I don't know that they're necessarily full-fledged NGOs, but I'm sure if I asked how many people here would be willing to help collect data, a lot of hands would go up in the audience. And it certainly was in Santa Rosa. So I would encourage you, it's been over a year, to access the those opportunities to utilize those folks out there. And if we get a better handle on what I think is a recurring theme through here, is that there's a lot more out there. And when we have much better data, we can make much more intelligent decisions. So I certainly want to thank everybody that came and testified. And we're going to be duplicating this for other sites. Four more times to listen to other testimony. So I just want to thank you and encourage the department to jump on this opportunity as soon as possible and utilize these folks. They want to help. Obviously, they have their own agenda, and they want to get out there and harvest resources and enjoy what they want to do. But I'm sure that if they came back and said, hey, they're not there, they're going to be the first ones to jump up and say, we need to halt this.
And just to echo some of what Mike's saying, Ian, you were there. Gary, you weren't, but you're going to get educated quick on this stuff. But one of the reasons that that Mike and I wanted to expand the sites and move around a little bit was because the department was using the easy accessible sites to get their data from, and that's where all the abalone divers from the whole area in Northern California were going, and you can't really get a true count in an area that's been hit as hard as those areas that have easy access. And we wanted to have other areas where the general public, the normal person, didn't have access to walk out there and start taking abalone and use some of those areas for a more true picture of what kind of resources really out there. And so that's why I asked earlier if we had any any data from some of those new sites, because I think that's going to make a big difference. So we're in a position of how to make a decision that I'm not sure we're ready to make yet. So,
you know, I feel the same way as does Jim. Intellectually and morally, I think we can't, without having the appropriate data, particularly from San Miguel, et cetera, do that. You know, whatever this is going to take, we're going to need to have that data. Whatever it takes, if it takes public-private partnerships, if it whatever it happens to be. Well, John, you know what you guys need, Gary.
You know what you need,
and I don't want to. I'm not suggesting that you do something with which we're not all comfortable. But my point is, at least I personally am very uncomfortable making a decision without complete information. I just am.
And I would caution that waiting to approve the plan will not hasten data collection. The data will be collected as soon as we can collect it, and frankly, five meetings this month with you may prevent some of that, and I'm going to talk with my staff about perhaps replacing them with me at these meetings so that they can go collect the data.
That's good. Get them out there. Don't we have four biologists in Northern California we can utilize?
Yes, you do, and they will be out there as well.
Okay.
They will also be helping staff these meetings as well. So, again, I will talk with those staff and these staff. If the weather is good during one of your meetings, you may see my face or someone else's face who's less familiar with the plan at this meeting, so that the people who are most familiar with the plan can go collect data. I strongly support that. I strongly support going to get more data at San Miguel. I see no reason not to work with the fishermen on that. And
Ian, why don't you videotape your presentation?
It just was.
Well, there you go.
So we can
use that because this is what my third or fourth time I think hearing it. So, but I know we need to get it to the public, but maybe that helps.
We can do it on DVD.
I mean, no disrespect here. I'm just telling you where I am intellectually on this.
Yeah.
I don't see how I can make that decision without the data.
Well, part of that, if I can answer some of that, I mean, the plan in front of you has the guideline or the roadmap as how we want to collect the data and go about recovery and also existing management. And part of what's been holding us back as far as going full bore into what the plan is suggesting us to do is adoption of the plan. Adoption of the plan gives us basically the go-ahead to go ahead and say, okay, this is the commission agrees with what's in the plan and the guidelines as far as recovery and management. We'll go ahead and do that. And we started it already. We've been working with Jim Marshall and other constituents to try to expand our ability to collect the data. It's going to be a lot. There's a lot more things we need to do, but we're working as best as we can with the resources we have.
No, we're guys, don't go there, okay? You got some help here. Let us take care of our business and see if we can't help you.
No.
We're gonna have four more of these meetings and we're gonna get something accomplished out of them. But look. You hear what we're saying up here. Don't keep doing that, or I'm just going to shut the meeting down, and you're not going to even get our conversation going up there. Okay? I want to thank you guys. You know, well, your voice didn't fall on deaf ears. So encourage others to come to the other meetings that you know up north or wherever else we're having our meeting. Anyone else? Okay. Meeting adjourned.
Mark.